show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A brief hiatus, not caused in any way by a hooky playing or anything like that. No. After a brief hiatus that wiped out Prayer Meeting Wednesday last night, we're back. Our little conversation continues, and I'm ever so happy. No, really, I am. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the day's selection of stories chosen for your examination and delectation. That's where you'll find the spiffy new media player. It's also where you'll find access to the chat room, folks wandering in even as we speak. Good evening, room. And, of course, the PayPal button. We are trying to raise $270 this evening because we've gotten in a hole brought to you by, this is not exactly an advertisement, but it's the damn truth. Yesterday's lack of a program was brought to you by Chantel. Yeah. Our craptastic ISP, who apparently cannot keep the internet going when the wind blows. Also brought to you by Appalachian Power, coal-fired electricity for when you need it. Coal-fired electricity not available when you need it most. Also taken down by the wind. Really? gotta love that 100-year-old grid, that 100-year-old power transmission technology. How about that? The wind, which is almost always blowing, took down a power grid run on the remains of ancient plant material dug out, blasted out, poisoned out from the ground, burned, which heats the planet, which is not good for humans, not to mention any number of other species. Yeah, it got taken out by the wind. And no kidding, you know, we had a pretty significant wind spill yesterday. When the power went out, first thing we did, periodically, Ferg and I run checks on the generator to make sure it's ready at a moment's notice. But you don't like to have a lot of gasoline sitting around just because it tends to, you know, go bad. So we made sure the generator was in good shape, and then he and I took off in the blasting wind. You want to talk about fun? How about driving across a single arch bridge a little more than a mile long in 50, 60, 70 mile an hour winds with said bridge suspended 876 feet above the canyon floor? It was exciting. So we got our gas, ran back here, by which time the power had come back. And a few minutes later, the interweb tubes came back. And then they left again. See, wind. So you have that. And that's what knocked us out last night. And I want to thank, at the beginning of the program, I want to thank our chat room moderator, and Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky for pulling the pin for this this month of March and putting a $100 challenge on the table. He Sparky is willing to match the first $100 that come in the way of attempting to keep this whole little thing going. Your kind contributions, your kind gifts, because after all, we don't sell anything here. I mean, we're not even selling coffee mugs or mouse pads or access to the program. But no, Sparky has put his March Pull the Pin Challenge on the table and will happily match the first $100 in contributions that come in, which will leave us only needing to raise another $70 to come even when we start tomorrow evening with Friday on the Front Porch. So what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about for the match, 10 people, $10, 20 people, $5, 2 at 50, 1 at 100, any way you want to do it. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address, which you may certainly use. Just remember, checks, money orders, things like that should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable, in fact, to Head On Communications, because that's how Boss Man Wayne pays the bills. Yeah. So, here we are, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn, and we got some, we've got a veritable rose garden, Thorns. Lots of fun. Lots of maybe running screaming into the yard. All right, thank you very much to our buddy Tom out in the Bay Area. He says $25 going out in today's mail, so that means we're only $75 away from meeting Sparky, co-Californian Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. Thank you very much, Tom. Now, where to go with this? It turns out that yesterday, in the House of Representatives, and this is one of those South Carolina in the House moments, they had themselves a little hearing of the Senate. I mean, I'm sorry, not the House, the Senate. I was thinking about something else. Hearing over in the House where they want to compel that Kenyan Muslim socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people, Muslim Marxist, to crack down on people who want to smoke cannabis legally in Washington State and Colorado. Yeah, that was led by South Carolina in the House. No, this was a hearing over in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee regarding the determination made by the State Department regarding the national interest for the northern half of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is, of course, death in a big tube. Here's the witness list. Steve Horn had the story over at DSmog blog. And Steve has been on the program, and I consider him a good friend of the show, the program. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee brought in four witnesses to testify. Karen Alderman Harbert is president and CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Institute for 21st Century Energy. Although, oddly enough, somehow or another, energy derived from a source that's been in the earth for some several millions, if not hundreds of millions of years, strikes me as being anything but 21st century. Oh, well, Mr. Orwell, courtesy phone. Then also on the panel was retired NASA climatologist James Hansen, who has been arrested even down in the Coal River Valley trying to bring attention to the ongoing horrors of extreme extraction in the form of, in this case, mountaintop removal. James Hansen testified. Sierra Club Executive Director Michael Broon, whom Steve Horn identifies in his story for DSmog blog as another critic of the Keystone XL. And that is certainly a fair characterization. Michael Broome is a critic of the Keystone XL pipeline. And the final the final witness was James Jones. No, not the guy who wrote From Here to Eternity. James Jones was called to testify by the Republican side to talk about how important it is that we take this god-awful, extreme goo from the hell sands of Alberta and put it in a pipeline that will probably break a lot and send it down to be processed in Houston and get on a boat and go to China. Because, you know, we are talking, after all, about a global market and a global resource. James Jones is the president of Jones Group International. And is said to be an expert in high-level advisory and consulting services in the areas of international energy policy. Guess what? James Jones is a consultant to the American Petroleum Institute. He's also a former military, looks like a Marine. Yeah, that's four stars on his costume. He's a consultant for the American Petroleum Institute. He spent over $22 million lobbying on behalf of Keystone XL since 2008, the API has. He's also part of Environmental Resources Management, which is, oddly enough, the outside pro-Keystone XL outfit that wrote the environmental review for the pipeline. Which is also, and they're also a member of the American Petroleum Institute. Yeah. There's, I knew when I read this story that I remembered the name of James Jones. He was, National Security Advisor to President Obama for almost 2 years. He knocked off in October 2010. To go back and, you know, start grubbing and hustling for the hydrocarbon industry some more. When he left, he was made a U.S. Chamber of Commerce Fellow, which he remains. Interestingly, and something you don't see a lot of noise made about, he's also been intimately involved in mountaintop removal. This is one of those people that thought it was a really, really good thing to poison Appalachian communities, poison their water, poison their air, poison their bodies, poison their communities, poison their friends, their neighbors, their aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, children. Because money. And here's the fun part. None of that was disclosed in advance, formally disclosed in advance of the Senate hearing. Despite the fact that the Friends of the Earth called out James Jones to make public his client list before he went hustling and conning for the Keystone XL. Friends of the Earth said, Friends of the Earth is asking for a clarification of relationships between the former United States National Security Advisor and proponents of the Keystone XL pipeline. On Thursday, March 13th, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is holding a hearing entitled Keystone XL. The hearing was today. And the National Interest Determination. The committee has invited distinguished guests to discuss why the pipeline shouldn't be constructed, including climate scientist Dr. James Hansen, who retired from NASA to join the Columbia University Earth Institute, and president of the Sierra Club, Michael Brune. The panel also includes, yada, 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 James Jones, a paid advisor to the American Petroleum Institute. If Jones truly serves as an advisor to API, it is important that he disclose the interests he represents. That is why Friends of the Earth's president, Eric Pica, wrote Jones a letter today asking him to name any of his employers who might have vested interests in approving the pipeline. Yeah, I'm guessing there was no response. One last little thing, though, out of this story. I can see where Dr. Hansen would be a good witness. I personally approve of him being a witness because he understands both the human and the scientific cost of extreme energy extraction. I'm a little less than thrilled, however, with the invitation that was extended to Michael Brune. Michael Brune's not an expert in anything. If my email inbox is any indication, the only thing Michael Brune is an expert in is fundraising. After all, it was just a week or so ago that I received an email ostensibly from Mr. Brune, which declared, and we've talked about this before, last day to save the gray wolf. Yeah, really. One last gray wolf in the last day, and they were bringing, he was in his cell there in Huntsville, Texas, on death row, and they were bringing him his, you know, the gray wolf had asked for the really, really fancy Alpo for his last meal. Last day to save the gray wolf, send the contribution now. We'll send you a Sierra Club messenger bag. That costs more than your contribution. Because we can buy eggs in Malta for 4 cents apiece and sell them in Pianosa for 3 cents apiece, and everybody makes a profit, and everybody's got a share, and yeah. You reckon, and I'm just asking this question thought experiment, I suppose. You reckon there's anybody out in, say, Nebraska who might be able to speak with real authority to why they don't want this big tube of death going across their land and potentially having humongous negative impacts on the Ogallala Aquifer? Because I'm sure that the answer to what about the Ogallala Aquifer, when posed to, say, Karen Alderman Harbert of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Institute for 21st Century Energy, or opposed to former General James Jones, the answer would be, yeah, but money! Because, you see, they don't give a good old-fashioned stinking damn about whether people get poisoned to death. Well, you know, we talked to the accountants, and that's in the cost-benefit analysis. Yeah, but what about water for everybody in the middle of the United States? Yeah, but money! So we know what they're about. And we got a pretty good idea about what Dr. Hansen's about. Let me just put it this way. I think when the invitation came out to Michael Brune, what should have happened is the answer should have been, well, thank you very much, but insofar as there are real people on the ground whose lives are going to be affected by this, I would like to defer on behalf of the Sierra Club to people who are actually impacted and affected by this decision. Therefore, I recommend to you that, and I can't think of the gentleman's name offhand, but he's been instrumental out in Nebraska in trying to put the brakes on this nightmare. How about him? Just asking. And I'm sure that I'm sure that some Senate staffer was responsible for the invitation being extended to Mr. Bruhn. That does not, however, mean he had to accept it. And, I mean, gosh, an invitation to testify in front of the Senate? Golly, that sure would burnish one's credentials, wouldn't it? If credentials burnishing is what you're about. And I'm sorry, at this point I'm just skeptical. This is the same Sierra Club who, under Karl Pope's leadership, took millions upon millions upon tens of millions of dollars from the fracking industry to shut them up about fracking. They later gave the money back when they got busted, but only after they got busted. And this is also the same Sierra Club that connived and collaborated with the fracking industry in Illinois to go wholeheartedly, diametrically against the wishes of people who are calling for a fracking moratorium in Illinois. You can just look up any, just go to Huffington Post and find the stuff that Jeff Biggers has posted on this. And then turned around and look, I mean, okay, by example, the United Mine Workers of America. I know, that doesn't seem really an apt comparison on its face, does it, comparing the United Mine Workers of America with the Sierra Club? But sure, they both claim to be acting in the best interests of their membership. And during the 2012 presidential cycle, the United Mine Workers of America could not reach a consensus on whom to endorse for president, because a bunch of the United Mine Workers knew that they sure didn't want Willard Romney, Bishop Willard Romney. But apparently an equal number of United Mine Workers members knew that they just couldn't stand to have their union endorse that Kenyan Muslim Marxist socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies either. So for the first time in freaking eons, the United Mine Workers of America declined to endorse a presidential candidate. Well, granted, it's not on the presidential level, but the Sierra Club issued its list of endorsements regarding candidates for the Illinois State House and actually positively endorsed a Democratic candidate for treasurer of the state of Illinois, who is all about clean coal and fracking the F out of Illinois. It is possible to say we decline to endorse. But, nah. So that's what makes me suspicious of the Sierra Club, among other things. Last day to save the gray wolf. Marty asking, you know what Jay Inhofe, or however he's spelled, would say about the guy in Nebraska? Oh, what, tree-hugging, commie, socialist, pinko, the almost Muslim Marxist? Sure, because every time Jim Inhofe opens his mouth, bats fly out. So, just, if you see a story about that hearing, maybe understand what was going on. No voices from the grassroots there, because, well, there was nobody capable of speaking for the grassroots there. Mm-mm. And that feels like a thorn in the side. Among other things, there was a march on Monday, March the 10th, where hundreds of American citizens gathered in front of the Philadelphia Federal Building to demand that President Obama not issue a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. There was civil disobedience as people blocked the doors of the federal building. And one of the people who helped block the doors was Cherie Hunkala, who is, among other things, national coordinator of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. And she said, "Poor people are the most affected by the climate crisis. The Democrats and Republicans have thrown indigenous and poor people down the stairs again and again. This is no different. We should not be building new oil pipelines. The promises of jobs from oil companies are false. We can create long-term jobs by building a sustainable economy. The Green New Deal will provide jobs, housing, health care, and education for all, and it will address climate change and the environmental crisis." This is what I like to refer to as how to get it right. This is linkage between human rights campaigners and so-called environmental campaigners to make it clear that if there are no humans, there are no environmental concerns. True enough. The whole goal was to build a bigger movement for justice. You may recall from, say, Tuesday night's program, the fact that, what was his name? Dr. Batten in Alabama. And that's social justice is communism. They want to change the way thing, the Constitution, they think it can be made better. Yeah, that. So, big thanks going out to, as I mentioned, Tom, and to Beth, and to Sal, and to Kevin, and to Rob. Between them, we are only $25 away from meeting Sparky's Pull the Pin March Challenge. Thanks, one and all. Hopefully we'll get there quickly, and then we'll go to work on the remaining $70 to keep us even as we move toward the end of the week here on this here 13th day of March, 2014. Yeah, woke up to about an inch of snow on the ground today. Got down to about 15 degrees here with a wind chill from hell last night. Rob notes, with his contribution to the Pull the Pin Challenge, "A truth-seeking volunteer mountain bike patroller in my local state park, hiking trails and fire roads. Also a Trekkie and Star Wars on the dark side Darth Vader wannabe. Sorry, no apologies necessary." Thank you, Rob. Thank you very much. So all of this business about, this is too funny. John Prager over at Americans Against the Tea Party posted this. And now, in light of the fact that we were talking about climate change relationships between the Keystone XL, and it goes back to Tuesday evening, KCBD News Channel 11 in Texas. And our good friend Sergi in Fort Worth, being a weather guy, probably either saw or got close to the, the National Weather Service out of Lubbock, Texas, issued a warning for a haboob, H-A-B-O-O-B, which is a weather term. It's a weather word, meaning a particularly violent dust and or sandstorm. Message reading, haboob northwest of Lubbock as seen from the science spectrum. If you must drive west of Lubbock, plan for near zero visibility in blowing dust and strong winds of 50 plus miles per hour. Okay? Fairly standard, arguably non-controversial, simple weather advisory, National Weather Service doing the job that the National Weather Service has put out there to do. I mean, there was a photograph of the thing, and it's pretty stunning. But no. Release the hissies! And the Facebooking and the tweeting went wild. The correct term for one of these giant sandstorms really is haboob. This prompted one Tony Washburn to opine, "It's not even about where the word comes from or who uses it. It's the fact that we do not need to supplant a term for something that we already have a term for. Dust storm or sandstorm works just fine. If it were a case of a phenomenon that just now occurred and we never had a term for it, that would be one thing. Replacing a term or a word of meaning just the same exact thing just causes it's fun or what it's whatever the reason is just stupid." Kind of like derecho. We'd never had straight line winds in a massive giant land hurricane blow through Appalachia like we did a couple of summers back. Derecho. So the hillbillies needed a word because great big goddamn windstorm was just too big a mouthful for your average TV weatherman. Up jumped Judy Sumpter to straighten out one Dan Jackson, who is apparently the weather guy at KCBD. "Dan Jackson, why don't you do a story on those of us offended by that ridiculous Middle Eastern, M-E-D-D-L-E, Middle Eastern term? Since when do we need to apply Muslim vocabulary to a good old American dirt storm? Did we move the country or what? I take great offense to such terminology. Go back to calling them dirt storms." And Martin Van Zeelst chimed in and said, "It's called a dust storm in these here parts." Talitha Mote Eldridge responded, "It's a sandstorm!" Exclamation points in extremis. "Not a haboob!" Randy Locke agreed, "It's still a sandstorm in Texas, not a haboob!" Then this, because, well, teabags, Texas. Jeff Bertrand. "Never had a haboob until we got that Muslim boob for POTUS." President of the United States. "Never had a haboob until we got that Muslim boob for POTUS." James D. Ward wanted to know, "And at what point did we stop calling them sandstorms and why?" And Jeff Bertrand was right there with the answer. "At the point when the Muslims started taking over. Why? Because fools let them." Tony Washburn wasn't done, though. "We don't live in the Middle East. We call these dust storms. I am quite sure that they do not call them dust storms over there in English in the middle of their native tongue." Whatever that actually means, in the middle of their native tongue. "We don't need to import a term for something we already have a name for." Martha Brown Alexander was right, too. West Texas dust storm. We live in Texas, not the Middle East or a foreign country. You live in the USA, and on top of that, in Texas, get the right term.
Okay.
Alan Autry, no, not sure if he's any kin to Gene, said, John Robinson wants to call it a haboob. Let him move to where a sandstorm is called that. Many exclamation points. Debbie Wheeler said, give me a break. It's called a dust storm. Texas is not a raghead country. Raymond C. Stapleton's out there defending the English, too. Why do we use foreign names for American storms? Because, by God, that was American dust. American dirt. Why do we use foreign names for American storms? We don't live in the Middle East. Why not call wind, wind, and dirt, dirt? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, one would be tempted to refer Raymond C. Stapleton to say, oh, I don't know any number of native languages that predate English or Spanish or even Scandinavian tongues being spoken on this continent, Scandinavian tongues being the first European tongue spoken here. Let's see, Mexica god for the night wind was, help me here, Ehecatl. I don't think you actually pronounce the L so strong. Ehecatl. So either Ehe or Kat or He or E means wind. So Raymond C. Stapleton, maybe you might want to consult Noel. And John Prager noted at Americans Against the Tea Party that Raymond C. Stapleton got all bent out of shape. And Raymond Stapleton contacted me because he wants everyone to know he is not a racist, as people on the news site's Facebook page have apparently developed the opinion that he is a racist. More correctly, he alleged that posting a screenshot of his actual words somehow constitutes libel. Oh, aren't the little teabaggers fun? Brenda Daffern, however, was upset. It is not a fun word. It is a shame to our West Texas culture. We have sandstorms in West Texas. Barry Welch, bent out of shape. It's a freaking dust storm, people. It's not a haboob. This is America. Be proud. If tomorrow all the things I love were blown away by a haboob, it would still be just a dust storm to me in West Texas. LaDonna Livingston got real. Who cares where the term comes from? I just wish it would leave. Eventually, though, as Americans Against the Tea Party note, KCBD caved and started referring to the haboob as a dust storm. First they were pissed off about a Cheerios ad. Then they got mad about America the Beautiful being sung in some foreign language. And now referring to a dust storm by I doubt sitting over there on the sceptered isle, there, you know, merry oldie England, I doubt that they had a bunch of great big goddamn dust storms. So probably, I'll bet you, haboob is probably the older word, just like algebra is. Just like guitar is. Just like, and I hear they're right fond of it down Lubbock way, alcohol is. Alcohol. Algebra. Don't tell the baggers. It will not end nicely. They'll have a Facebook plum hissy on you. Tim from LA with a little follow up. Speaking about Habub, now meteorologists are terrorists. Well, they're trying to impose meteorological Sharia law on the good people of Lubbock. A Habub, says Tim, is a type of intense dust storm carried on an atmospheric gravity current. Habubs occur regularly in arid regions throughout the world. It's Arabic. Yes, yes. No, it's a Muslim word. Dr. John noting, my brother went to school in Lubbock. Texas Tech has a surprisingly good technical theater program. He says, Lubbock isn't the edge of the world, but you can see the edge of the world from there. I think he meant it metaphorically. Seems appropriate. Yeah. Yeah. Lubbock or maybe Waco, where they walk out on Bill Nye the Science Guy for saying that there are myths in the Bible. What's the English word for alcohol? Yeah, we just call it beer. Just like we call ribs, ribs. Because it's American. Sometimes it's fun, even on Thorn in the Side Thursday, to get a smile along with the thorns. Tim pointing out, wind and dirt is not a USA term. Dirt, origin 1250 to 1300, Middle English dirt, drit, cognate with Old Norse drit, excrement, compare Old English dritan. The word wind. Origin, before 900, Middle English, noun, Old English, cognate with Dutch-German wind, Old Norse vinder, Gothic winds, Latin ventus. Tim noting, Middle English does not sound USA, so yes, we use foreign words, and Habub should not be any different. Yeah, do they teach Latin down there at Texas Tech? Because I'm sure, first semester, Latin 1, so if they do, some enterprising professor would say, by the way, welcome to Latin 1. Amo amas amat amam amat amat. Agricola, agricola, agricolae, agricolam. Agricola, agricola, agricolam, agricola. Agricolae, agricolae, agricolarum. Agricolas, agricolis. Agricolis, agricolas, agricolis. Or something like that. And then the enterprising classics professor might say, by the way, students, in welcoming you to Latin 1, I would like you to know that 70% of the words that come out of your mouth every day in a language you know as English are actually derived from Latin words. Kind of puts paid to that whole English first, but these are patriots in Lubbock who are desperately trying to keep creeping Sharia, Muslim, Marxist, socialist fascism from entrenching itself in the good old American wind and dirt west of Lubbock. Kate pointing out, and appropriately I might add, we called them Habubs in Arizona. English. What about Sirocco's in California? We call the wind Mariah some places here in Montana. Don't make me play that song. Away out here, they got a name for wind and rain and thunder. The rain is Tess, the fire is Joe, and they call the wind Mariah. Yeah, I know it. Oh, I do. Chinook winds up here are a First Nation name. What's the issue? God, I'm so tired of these ignorant folks. And Kate says, thanks, Tim. You saved me all those keystrokes this afternoon. Well, keystrokes are a finite resource now, aren't they? Marty with a bit of a rhetorical question. And my dad is trying to get me to retire to Texas? Now, don't get me wrong. There are lovely, lovely people there and lovely parts of Texas. But the overarching problem, as we see out of this Habub story, is the boob in Habub. And what I mean by that is something has happened in our culture. And I really don't think it's a general human trait. This is an American thing, unless folks in other countries can tell me otherwise. This seems most prevalent in the United States of America, that the stupid seem to feel most privileged to try to out-scream, out-shout everyone else. Because they're proud of their stupid. And they're proud of their stupid in the name of loving their country. Even though half of these people whose quotes I was reading are probably teabaggers who hollered, "Hell yeah!" when Rick Perry was talking secession a couple of years back. I'm at pains to understand this. What brought this on? Where did this come from? This is an open topic for conversation to which I invite your opinion. Why, when, how, where did we empower, who empowered the stupid? Because, see, you know, Kate, Tim, the Horn family commune, okay, it's a haboo. Just like here, we say, okay, it's a derecho, is that what it means? Derecho means that 80 mile an hour winds blow for a minute, and your craptastic coal-fired electric grid that's strung on toothpicks through the woods it just collapses and takes 1.5 million people off the grid, and they don't have power for 2 weeks? That's a derecho? Okay, got it, because it takes a long time to say the other stuff, and that's the beauty of language. You come up with a word. Words mean things. And how did the Republican right wing get so far away from that? Because they're the ones that were hollering words mean things back in the mid to late 1990s, weren't they? Yeah. Thanks very much going out to Glenn and to Asa. We are now $10. We have now fully met. We have now fully and completely met Sparky's March Pull the Pin Challenge, and we are $10 along the way toward the extra $70 we need to raise this evening to bring us even. Thank you. Thank you very much. So six more folks, $10 apiece. Two at 30, four at 15. Yeah. Thank you. Marty noting, considering where Lubbock is, I know I can no longer fly Frontier Airlines, not that they fly out of Sacramento anymore anyway, because I'd have to go through Denver and fly south to Houston over Lubbock to get to Lubbock. Oh, my aching back. Yeah. So in the middle of all of this silliness, I wanted to share something with you as we wind down toward the end of the filibobster, not to say that there aren't a whole lot more thorns in the side yet to be plucked from our hide. This comes from the Rap News crew over at Juice Media, in which they attempt, and I think hilariously, you can find the link to this video, by the way, over at headonradionetwork.com in today's newsfeed. They attempt to, the Rap News crew attempts to summarize the current state of the growing crisis in extreme energy in not just the United States, but the world. Let's give it a listen.
This is rap news. Adjust your mental tuning. Hello, fellow children of the Industrial Revolution. We come of age, but our age seems to be running out of steam. As well as oil, coal, gas, water, and old trees, we face a crisis. In spite of our advancement in science, the ratio of energy expended to energy actually required is rapidly declining. Just as it did for the Romans, Mayans, and the Easter Islanders before they crashed and expired. Has our brief joyride passed its peak on the axis? And does anyone know how to get off it before it collapses? With not much time left to get some answers, we turn to our leading nations. Speaking for America, General Baxter.
Bob, this is an era of toil. We've reached peak oil. We now need more energy to retrieve oil from the soil than we receive from the oil we retrieve. Which means more recessions. Prepare for GFC 3.
Can we survive this energy crisis?
Why, yes. Yes, we American. Obama is wise and farsighted, and he's about to ratify this futuristic device.
A pipe.
Yes, the Keystone XL pipeline, to be precise, which will move more crude from Mordor, tar sands, to Isengard, streaming under large tracts of aquifers and farmlands.
Is that safe?
It's fine. It's only leaked 12 times so far, man. We just pay the fine.
Right. But how does this solve the peak oil crisis you described?
Jobs, Bob. Think of the jobs it will provide. And we'll never depend on foreign oil in the future. You don't want us to have to go to war again, do you?
Oh, yeah. You Americans drive it a wall.
Here's the next powerful nation to show us the course. China's Minister of Energy. Why so dim?
Ni hao, Robert.
Thanks for beaming in. How's Beijing?
Yeah, pretty great. As you can see, fresh, clean air. Just breathe in. Everyone healthy. Life amazing.
But Confucius says the whole world needs a quick call now.
Profound.
And how do you plan to bring that about?
By putting up on a chorus rat. We call it one call piracy. It's total success. So unlike the US, we never need to go to war.
What about Tibet? We do hear calls to free Tibet.
Correct. For China, Tibet was free. Yeah, so important part of a free energy policy. Make Tibet our colony. Lots of copper, oil, and possibly best combustible fuel of all.
Max in the monastery.
We've heard the solutions of the superpowers. What about the super rich? Have they got some newer answers? Our next guests discussing these pressing matters are entrepreneurs Elon Musk and Richard Branson.
Yo, Richard. What's really good, Elon?
Let's flip the screen and show these peons the high-tech shift that we be on.
We're beyond.
Two debonair billionaires.
Rock and recon.
Humanity's lost best hope for this eon. And yo, Musk.
What up?
I think it's time that you bust and show the peeps on Earth how it's time to adjust.
So check it. Elon Musk live and direct from Mars. Give the home planet solar panels and Tesla cars. Electrical. Ethical, ecological miracle.
Yeah.
Super.
Charged.
Super. Designed.
Super.
Refined.
Super.
Billionaire.
Fueling them with lithium.
On fire.
Killing them. So it's high time we colonize the solar system then. Hey yo, Branson.
Sir Richard.
You ready for action?
Born ready.
Tell the people of Earth your plan then.
Let's get it cracking.
We're planning on capturing asteroids with nano droids and then dragging them back into orbit Earth. So we can mine the fuck out of them. For cobalt. For zinc, gold, platinum.
Just suck it out of them.
And make a quick buck out of them.
Isn't that dangerous?
What if an asteroid crashed on Earth because you miscalculated this?
Unfortunate.
But by then I'll have my fortune on Mars.
I'll use Virgin Galactic to stay in orbit.
So long, suckers.
Good to know we can count on your resourcefulness, guys.
What other energy sources can we find?
Terrence Moonseed.
What's your view of this scene?
The Illuminati are suppressing the truth from the feed to lock us in and make it impossible to be free from the collapse of fossil fuel industries. But I have one word for you, Robert. Free energy. This whole freaking system could readily depend on a blend of Lemurian crystals, alien technology, and hemp. But the rat and cotton industry conspired to have him condemned. And the government kept UFO tech for weapons instead.
And then?
Then climate scientists who owe their degrees to industry invented climate change to make energy fees increase. When all energy should be available only for free. Global warming is a hoax.
Totally agree.
Speaking about landish solutions for the crisis we're having, Prime Minister of Australia, Tony Abbott.
The science is out. Since I assumed this leader position, Australia's heard no bad news from the Climate Commission.
Because you abolished
it. Because I abolished it. We'll also hear a lot less from the Tarkine Forest, renewable energy.
Mining companies?
What is this, the ABC? Don't make me cut your funding.
Hey, Australia, deadly bushfires are part of the deal.
And this fake snow in the US is geoengineered to kill.
I don't trust climate scientists.
They clearly just shill.
Curious that opposite sides can believe
Climate change is not real.
We've heard theorems, challenges and thoughts from entrepreneurs, free thinkers and leaders on this forum. Yet time's up and we still seem stalled with no way forward. But wait, we're getting a call on the juice channeling portal. I'll turn it up. Who's trying to confer with us?
Leo.
Wait, is that Copernicus?
Can you hear me?
For certain, but what have you got to say on the energy crisis concerning us?
Well, I wrote this book in 1543, in which I proposed the heliocentric theory.
Yes, we know, the sun at the center.
And the earth moves around it.
Revolutionary. world. Bits of borders in my day were a fool to see.
Well, it took centuries, but now we do accept it.
Yeah, I see you noobs still not quite get it. Which is why I, Copernicus, have returned to stasis.
State what?
You are still living in the dark ages.
But the second heliocentric revolution is nigh. To discern your place in the cosmos, you once shifted your mind. You must use that again when you think of energy source. The sun, not the earth, is at the center of the universe.
Cool. Just as earth revolves around the sun in a cycle, so must human life.
And it must happen at once. It's vital. It's your only hope of survival.
The signal's dying.
I must go now. Other planets need reminding.
Thank you, Copernicus, for returning with such force to provide us this urgent advice during this awesome crisis. And to our guests, those invited and all who surprised us. Now a final thought before we end these tidings. Many of our problems do require resource findings, scientific advances, new tools and devices. But this crisis requires a realignment of paradigm, which has to happen, not in a lab, but in our own minds. The second heliocentric revolution has already begun. Will we have time to affect this great ship vis-a-vis the sun, or will we shun our star's light and fall into darkness? Join us next month as we search for more answers.
And I have to confess, with the video as well, it's even funner. So run on over to headonradionetwork.com and scroll down to Juice Media Satirizes Conspiracy Theorists. Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Tony Abbott, Peak Oil Proponents, and more in Rap News episode number 22. I've seen several of these, and they're really, really good. That may have been their best, though. Really. About 4 minutes before the hour, so we'll just say that the second hour of this Thorn in the Side Thursday is well underway at this point. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. You are welcome to jump into the fray and bring whatever, step forward and pluck whatever thorns are embedded in the side of your hide right out for examination by us all. Thorn in the Side Thursday, 304-658-3333, or on the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, via Skype. We'll get you in just fine, too. Of course, we try to make this a complete and total multimedia experience, so you can also share your thoughts in the chat room or on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. You can go to the Facebook and use it to connect to me, Bob Kincaid, if we're not already friended up. Why aren't we? Or you can go and like and sign on and follow the Horn, T-H-E-H period O period R period N period, Head On Radio Network over there. And that works quite well also. And speaking of Facebook, this kind of grabbed me. Jeffrey Zuckerberg has penned some sort of open letter, whatever, to President Obama, and then, of course, being because he's wealthy and privileged, he told the world about it, complaining about government spying. Okay. Valid complaint. Very valid. Except, once more, just because I'm highly suspicious of privilege, I have to question the source of the complaint. Agence France-Presse reporting Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg said Thursday he had called President... Oh, he didn't write him a letter. He called him. Well, he's got the secret Batcave number. He called President Barack Obama to complain that the U.S. government is undermining confidence in the Internet with vast secret surveillance programs. In a post on his own Facebook page, the founder of the huge social network expressed anger towards Washington in what appeared to be a reaction to new revelations about U.S. government surveillance. I've called President Obama to express my frustration over the damage the government is creating for all of our future. Okay.
Mr. Zuckerberg apparently does not pay an editor. Unfortunately, it seems like it will take a very long time for true, full reform. He went on and said, "The internet works because most people and companies do the same. We work together to create this secure environment and make our shared space even better for the world." Which is why I get about 9 dozen requests a day inviting me to try birthdays, Farmville. Mafia Wars has kind of gone by the boards now, hasn't it? Pearl's Peril. Oh, Jesus. Because people sign up for this stuff, and then Facebook runs out there and farms their data and uses it to try to hustle more people into their little money-making endeavors. Because money. Maybe that's a new potential bumper sticker. Maybe somewhere down the road we need to design 2 horn bumper stickers. One that says, "They want it all," and the second bumper sticker says, "Because money." Yeah. This is why, he continued, "I've been so confused and frustrated by the repeated reports of the behavior of the U.S. government when our engineers work tirelessly to improve security, we imagine we are protecting you against criminals, not our own government. Not protected, however, in the process, not protected, is your data from commercial usage by Facebook or whomever they deem necessary to sell it." Just saying. Does that bother you? I mean, it seems just a wee teensy-tiny bit hypocritical for a data miner to complain about data mining, right? I'm going to take a quick time out. I just realized that after all the power miseries, we're having some phone problems. Stand by while I fix this real quick, please. Be right back. Well, that didn't suck much. Yeah, it did. Who am I kidding? But we're back. Hi. Thorn in the side Thursday. Let me pluck this one out. Now, for some reason or another, after the power outage and the internet die-offs, I thought I'd gone through the entire system, but apparently I hadn't. And for some reason or another, the telephone system had unbooted itself. These things happen, you know. But all is apparently now well, which is a good thing. Sorry, it really, really takes the starch out of your train of thought to have something like that happen. Anyway, the lines are now open. I lied the first time. 304-658-3333. Skype is fine. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And, yeah, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. The Horn on Facebook. BobKincaid at gmail.com for email. And the ever-present chat room. So, yes, in the chat room there are pictures of people kicking computers and right. So there we are. Let's let it go now. Let it go now. This is why some outfits have like engineering departments and yeah. Had to get Agnes back here to help me fish some wire and. Hey, where's that one go? No, not that one. That one. No idea. None whatsoever. So we will go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good evening now. Good. So you, like I said in the email, you'll be comforted to know we have just as much wind out here, here in Colorado.
Does it blow your electricity and your internet away?
No. In all the years I've lived at this place I'm in now, I can count the number of electrical outages on one hand and have fingers left over. I think I must be right near a what do you call them? Switching station or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the name I'm looking for?
Substation.
Substation. But, yeah, I found the same problem, because you picked up my call so soon, you know, having the phones go out and then waiting for that and coming back. But you were talking about the tea beggars getting upset about using the word haboob or for windstorm.
Right.
And you were taught, I can't recall a Canadian or a Mexican getting upset because something in their language was being pronounced not Canadian or not Mexican.
Well, even the French, who probably are known generally as being the most careful guardians of the integrity of their language, allow the occasional foreign term to sneak in.
Sure. But we seem to be here in America. Well, part of the reason I think we feel privileged, and that's exactly what these teabaggers do, they feel privileged. They haven't known, we as a country haven't really known what other parts of the world have gone through in the past 100 years, such as war on their soil. And it's just, I think that's the reason for it.
Well, I think it also has something to do, Kevin, with the fact that it's not our language. And we really, really want it to be our language. And what many of these baggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and assorted and various and sundry booger eaters don't understand is that there are, even as we speak, right now, in this very instant, there are more speakers of English in Asia, in China, than there are in the entire United States.
Yep. Well, that's because we as a country, up until a few years ago, I know when I went to high school, there was no requirement to learn any second language. Almost any other country on this globe, it's a requirement that you learn a second language in high school.
Well, good God, in European high schools, how many second language, third language, fourth language? They're pretty language intensive.
Yeah, and they've got to be. I had an uncle, and he was, I'd have to call him somewhat bigoted, but he was smart enough to know that because of his job, he had to learn Spanish. That's what we dealt with. That's what he did. And, you know, if he's smart enough to know that, instead of demanding that the Spanish speak English, that's how he got his business. He didn't.
No, but the typical American approach is to just speak English more loudly. I said, you know, where is the bathroom? Right.
Hey, Bob, it happens to me. I'm blind. People somehow seem to think...
Oh, my God, I'm sorry. Blind. Yeah, screaming at blind people is another...
Yeah. So I think the proper word for these people is spoiled, because I think that's exactly what it is. They've been spoiled.
Yeah, but I can't give them a pass on stone ignorant, too.
Well, yeah, you could add that in, although I think
how many of these yahoos over on that Facebook posting ever, and I'd like to hope most of them, took algebra? Do they think algebra is an English word?
Yep, I know, and that's what makes it so
sure do
bad.
Like some of that guitar music.
Yep, and there's, like you were saying, Chinook. I mean, that's what
that was Kate's, yeah.
Out here. Native American language, who, by the way, are the true natives of this country. So if anybody's got to complain about their language being stolen, it would be them. So, you know, I just...
Well, or just rubbed out.
Do what?
Or just rubbed out, not stolen, just gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I saw some number not too long back about how many different languages it is estimated there were in the Americas in 1491, and how many of them went away.
Yep.
And by went away, I mean rubbed out, killed off, genocided. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I don't know. I have my doubts sometimes that we're going to survive all this. I'm encouraged by, you were talking about, I think on Tuesday, about the Pew Research poll that showed that the millennials are much more liberal and tolerant at all. But I find that encouraging, but I still find way too much discouraging to wonder if we're going to make it. Because even with this Malaysian plane thing, people are blaming Obama for the Malaysian plane going down.
Well, he's got those special powers, and what he did is he probably, you know, it's kind of like Sauron, you know, one ring to rule them all. You know, he's got the one liberal Muslim Marxist fascist Kenyan ring, and he's able to muster all this power. And the one Kenyan Muslim fascist Marxist ring gathers the power of, say, the gay. And so he used his one ring to use the gay ring to make the Malaysian airliner disappear. See how it works?
Yeah, but...
I mean, I find the Malaysian airliner story horrifying. Two, I also find it... thought-provoking, because I've been when it was first announced, I saw it and followed the story and thought, well, you know, they'll find it in a day or so. But now the weird stuff comes out about the fact that the Rolls-Royce engines on the 777,
mm-hmm.
were independently communicating back to home and showed that it could have gone for thousands of miles.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing that occurred to me is, and tell me if this makes any sense, you know, in a world where warfare is waged, as the Pentagon likes to say, Kevin, asymmetrically, which is more terrifying? We blew up your plane, or no one knows where your plane is?
Yeah, definitely. No one knows where your plane is. You know, to me, the "we blew up your plane" at least gives you some idea of what happened to the plane. But when you don't know where the plane went to, what happened? What was that other plane that disappeared a couple years ago in the Southern Pacific, I guess it was, down by Argentina? Do you remember that one?
No, I remember the Air France plane that disappeared between Brazil and France.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was the South Atlantic.
And I think they eventually did find some wreckage to that.
Yeah.
And CNN has...
But this is just weird. The transponders were turned off. The first thing that... And people who are more acquainted with flight can maybe tell me, why is it possible to turn off the transponders?
That would be a fairly good question. I think I saw something several years ago that pilots had the ability to turn off the transponders, somewhat of a signal that they were being hijacked, but the idea was not to turn them off completely, was to turn them off for a set amount of time, you know, to let them know they're being hijacked. But it doesn't make much sense in retrospect for anybody to be able to turn off those transponders.
Right, and Lottie just mentioned in the chat room, Kevin, he said, it's illegal to turn off the transponders on commercial flights over water.
Yep.
So why have a switch in the first place?
Yeah,
and I do find this interesting because it was a couple of weeks ago when the National Security Be Very Afraid Department issued a statement saying that, you know, the terrorists, whatever the hell that means, were working on a better design for a shoe bomb.
Sure.
So, is this that? We don't know.
Well, CNN's got supposed breaking news that parts of the plane have been found, I think a few thousand miles to the east of where they thought it was, but it's still...
Well, you know, the Chinese released a statement or something earlier in the last 24 hours saying they had seen something by satellite. The United States said, nope, that ain't it. Our satellites looked there, too. There wasn't nothing there.
Yeah, right. I guarantee you there's somebody that knows what happened to that plane that just ain't saying. Or they've got an idea, I should say. Because with all the technology, as you were talking about, with the engines independently talking back to home, as it were, you've got some sort of idea where that plane went down and what happened to it. Even when I can't remember the name of it now. The one that was going to Ireland that blew up many years ago. The terrorist eventually got convicted of it and sentenced to prison, and they let him go because he was dying of cancer.
Oh no! That was Pan Am 103.
Yeah.
Over Lockerbie, Scotland.
Right. Yeah. Even with Pan Am, they had an idea that something catastrophic had happened, and by that a bomb or an explosion, because of the way everything suddenly just quit.
Right, but we should also bear in mind that more prosaically, seems a contradiction in terms, more prosaically catastrophic things can happen. For people who are fans of professional golf, they may remember Payne Stewart.
Right.
Who was flying to a fairly short hop in a private jet from point A to point B, sudden decompression, everybody dies, it's on autopilot, and it crashes in South Dakota, which is, you know, 1,000 miles from the flight plan. So,
but if you remember that, they noticed something was wrong. They sent up two planes to force him down and found that he was unconscious inside, and they basically followed that plane down. They didn't shoot it out of the sky, but they watched it crash.
Yeah, because there was nothing that could be done.
Right. And most times, a pilot has at least got the seconds to send out a distress, mayday, something. It's very, very rare that something happens that a pilot doesn't get a chance to say, you might want to come look for us here because we're dead, you know, kind of thing. And I think it's all, I hate to say it's being blown out of proportion, but I think all the intrigue about what happened.
Well, no, I don't think it's being blown out of proportion as such, Kevin, because if you've got a loved one on that plane, you want you want an answer, and you want it soon, and you want better, you want good news instead of bad. Where the problem comes in is this almost, there's no almost, this ghoulish desire to make it be some sort of terrorism.
Right. That's what I mean. That sense.
And blame, you know, blame the for-profit media for that.
Yep. Because CNN, even with their breaking news right now, they're not saying anything that I didn't already know. It's not breaking news. I
know. No, but they pay a fortune for those really cool graphics, and they pay for the real cool scary music, and they got to use it. Because they've had ad salesmen out there saying, listen, we'll sell the break, you know, you can run right after the breaking news. I mean, that's a big deal because people pay attention to CNN's breaking, even though CNN's ratings are in the toilet.
Now, I can unfortunately remember a day when CNN's breaking news was just that, and it was worth watching. But when you break into every story and say it's breaking news, then...
Yeah, you know, it loses its force. I mean, I can remember when that static screen would go up on back in the days before cable, that static screen would go up on one of the three networks, and the very, very deadly and earnest, horribly, horribly serious baritone voice would say, "This is a special report." And I mean, and if you heard those words, it was time to sit down,
right?
Because something big had happened.
Yep.
And now it's just a marketing tool.
Sure. And for something like this, where, as you say, if you had a family member on that plane, you want to know what happened. I was kind of thinking about this earlier. I guess the best way to say it is how to handle a crisis like this. And this is not Obama. This is more Malaysia or anybody that has a plane go out of the sky like this. And I think you've got to be better in communication with the families first and the media second. And by that I mean, no, Malaysia for a while there was just nothing from them. We had a plane disappear. That was it. And that's not the way to do it. There are family members that are saying that they have heard nothing from Malaysian Airlines, whereas here in the States, we have a plane go down, and generally you have someone from the airlines calling you, giving you a time and place to meet, you know, kind of thing, where they can inform the families of what's happening. And this is... It's that, and also I think when something like this happens in international waters, because you've got now this plane supposedly in the Indian Ocean, you've got the original waters they were flying into, you've got so many countries involved that there has to be some real coordination. And I heard a commentator a while ago asked someone, should the United States take over this investigation? And the guy responded
what?
Back to me. Yeah. And the guy responded back to him, well, it's a Malaysian plane. We would have to be invited to take over the investigation. We can't just take it over. You know, it's not our plane. It's not our people. And this idea that it has to be us involved in every little thing, take over every investigation like we're the best and the brightest, never was true and never will be true. We are good. I am proud of my country for the technological advances they made. But by God, I'm not so proud as to say that if a plane goes down, I don't want to have the assistance of other countries in an investigation, and I don't want to take over their investigation if it's one of their planes.
Oh, dear God. Wait a minute. I got to share this with you, Kevin. This just rolled in from Tim from L.A. via the Sydney Morning Herald.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, at the other extreme, some believe aliens or UFOs may have abducted the Malaysian Airlines flight, and like something out of the television series The X-Files, transported it into an outer space wormhole with the passengers held against their will by terrorists or otherworldly aliens.
Yep.
Is that how Billy Pilgrim came on? No, Billy Pilgrim just much more came unstuck in time, right? That's how he wound up on Tralfamador with Montana Wildhack in the apartment that was furnished from stolen stuff from Sears in the Tralfamadorian Zoo. The Slaughterhouse Five, right? Tim noting, or you can blame Obama. Suffice it to say, Republicans blame him for everything. Or the rapture happened and all aboard, including the jet, went to heaven, which means the Christians in the U.S. were left behind. Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. Yep.
What do you mean we were left behind?
Yeah.
And immediately Creflo Dollar and Joel Osteen and the rest of them, well, you know, there's always Rapture 2.0. Stay tuned.
Yeah, well.
Marty pointing out, he says, I think a much more likely scenario is either KAL-007 shot down or JAL-123, a full 747 that blew out the tail cone pressure cap improperly repaired following a tail strike. The jet didn't go down right away. It was over land before it crashed into mountains, not thinking that MH370 crashed into mountains, but something inexplicable has happened.
Yep.
Why can you turn off the transponder in an aircraft? Heard of maintenance and testing?
Well, that's different. That
Marty says, I don't like the U.S. taking over any investigation involving a Boeing jet. The NTSB's number one priority? Protect Boeing. Everything is pilot error.
Yep. But most people can decipher that now. You know, you pretty much understand when you hear one of those reports what's protecting Boeing and what's could have been pilot error.
It was pointed out in the chat room, too, that I guess transponders have to be turned off on the ground so as not to interfere with ground radar or something like that, and then you turn them, on, that kind of stuff. I don't know, do we like manual switches or do we like computer automation? It's, you know, you say potato and I say potato, I guess.
Of securing, you know, security things that would have to be involved in that. But if a pilot had to turn off the transponder, there should be some sort of security procedure he has to go through. And if it has to be turned off on the ground, can it be linked up to your altimeter so that when you're showing zero, that your transponder would turn off, that kind of thing? You know, I mean, there's ways that these things can be done. But
when you see the transponder was turned off, you know, at 30,000 feet, that immediately leads people to think that somebody got through the cockpit door or, and you see what I'm saying? Yeah.
Well, it doesn't give you a fuzzy feeling to know that this pilot supposedly did let people that he did not know into the cockpit.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether to believe that or not, but
You don't know what to believe. The story about how the Malaysian Air Force may have seen the plane on radar, but decided not to scramble anything because?
Whereas here, we choose to scramble when we don't need to. But I will say this. It does happen. I remember in July of 96, I was living in Florida, just getting ready to move out here to Tampa, or out here to Colorado, and Air Florida flight went down in the Everglades.
I remember that.
They couldn't find it. There was nothing to be seen. It had crashed into the Everglades, and it had sunk to the bottom in about a minute. There was nothing there. And eventually they figured out where it crashed and everything, and they did find small little pieces, but at first they had no idea what happened. They knew it went down, but they didn't know where it was. And so it can happen. And yeah, in 2014, should it happen that frequently? No, but as AATTP pointed out today in one of their articles, it's a big damn ocean. You know, you have no idea the vastness of the ocean unless you've sailed it, and I have, and it is extremely hard to find parts of airplane or a human body in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when there is nothing but ocean everywhere you look, even when you're 30,000 feet up. And
yeah, at 7 to 10 knots, it's about 3 weeks from Hawaii to American Samoa.
Yep. So,
yeah.
You know, but I guess people like Alex Jones have got to make their money, you know.
Has he hollered false flag yet? I'm sorry.
Oh,
false flag.
Sure. I have no doubt he has. I haven't particularly paid attention, but I've heard all the space alien talk, and I can't.
I'll tell you, you want to talk about something that'll make you eat dirt and run rabbits?
What's that?
I was down at the local Rippy Mart the other day, and I saw a truck. Wow. And I just sat there staring in slack-jawed, gobsmacked amazement. In the corner of the back windshield, back behind the driver's side, there was a Friends of Coal sticker, of course.
All right.
On the back bumper, a black sticker, white letters, Infowars.com.
You should have taken a picture of that, Bob. I mean, that's just classic. You know, that's just classic.
Well, that, because, you know, the Kenyan Marxist Muslim fascist, right, is trying to steal all our coals.
Right, yeah. I do have to make one other comment, speaking of coal.
Sure.
Sierra Club. I get their emails just to keep an eye on what they're doing, but...
Last day to save the gray wolf!
Right. Woo. Any supposed pro-environmental group that works... either willingly or they were conned into it. Either way, I don't care. That they actually worked to approve fracking like they did with that Illinois deal, I don't consider them a pro-environmental group. And I would never consider donating to them. And I took the same note you did yesterday, that last day to save gray wolves. Gray wolves are important, but is that...
Yeah, they are, but it wasn't the last day to save them.
Right, exactly. And we'll probably get an email in a day or two saying, last day to save them again.
Last day to save more gray wolves.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to think that I'm unsympathetic to that issue. I'm very sympathetic to that issue. But I also happen to know that there are people who have worked tirelessly to save the wolf population who have reached out to, for instance, the Sierra Club, and been rebuffed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we'll... You little person, you can't save the gray wolf. Only we can save the gray wolf.
Sure.
With our mighty email.
Right. And when you consider that every almost, I'd say 90% of the emails I get from them are donation emails, you know, donate for this cause or that cause. You know, it just turns me off. And there's nothing wrong. I understand organizations have to get donations to survive. But I took great offense at that whole thing with Illinois. Particularly, I've got it somewhere on my computer, but with that one woman who posted that no fracking manifesto, if you remember what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Sandra Steingraber.
Yep. And they just went in there and undercut all the work she did by doing that. And when someone then does that to me, I just got to wash my hands of them. There's, you know, there's no gray area there when you do something like that. Because I for one, if you're sort of informed on fracking, you realize fracking is bad. There is no, just like there's no clean coal, there's no good fracking.
Yeah, there's no right way to frack, and there's no right way to do mountaintop removal. There's no right way to do the Keystone XL pipeline, because they are inherently bad in and of themselves. The fruit on the tree, the tree is poisonous, and the fruit on the tree is poisonous.
Yep.
And when the fruit falls off the tree, it poisons the ground, and the ground becomes poisonous. It's just poisonous. And you know, I hope, Kevin, that I'm not understood as just not liking the Sierra Club. That's not right at all. There are a lot of really, really good people working on the ground. But if I have learned anything, and if many of the people I know have learned anything, it is that they cannot. And it's not because the Sierra Club can't. It's just great big corporate modeled institutions cannot solve the essential existential problems of people who live in communities that are affected by this stuff. If you don't have people who are in the communities that are being poisoned actively working to stop it, no number of fundraising emails is going to do diddly.
No. And I think it has to do with leadership. There's a blind organization here in Colorado that I've seen the same thing happen with. Does good work, but because you elected the wrong person or persons to take the leadership roles of the organization, and therefore they have control of what content goes out into the emails, et cetera, et cetera. It puts your organization in a bad light, and that's what's happened to the Sierra Club. No doubt there's some good people with the Sierra Club, but when you have Michael Broom representing your organization with the kind of emails that he sends out, fundraising emails, and doing the things they did in Illinois, for instance, that's not the only one. I could name 10 or so others, and probably more. Then, as a consumer, would you not choose to not donate to them if you had a choice between them and, say, if you lived in Appalachia, the ACAC?
Sure. Or Coal River Mountain Watch? Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, there is some good news to be had today out of Illinois. And this is what I mean about people in the grassroots actually being the ones who will get the work done. Loggers who were clearing land to be stripped in Illinois for Peabody Energy went ahead and started with their clear cutting in the Shawnee Hills. They didn't even have the appropriate Environmental Protection Agency permits. Folks in Saline County who don't want that godforsaken strip mine anyway and know exactly why they don't want it, well, they they didn't wait around for, you know, the so-called smart people to come and save them, because the smart people already sold them out.
Yep.
So guess what happened today? Jeff Biggers posted today over at Huffington Post, update, road blockade stops Peabody loggers. Mr. Peabody's coal train ain't hauling Rocky Branch away. Illinois residents move to halt violation-ridden strip mine.
Yep.
He writes, facing off with the world's largest coal company, which literally sank its first historic mine nearby in 1895, Rocky Branch farmers, residents, and supporters fighting to protect their Shawnee Hills community against a violation-ridden and potentially devastating strip mine set up a road blockade this morning. The action forced Peabody haulers to unload their equipment to the side of the road as state police attempted to verify permit and road requirements.
Yep.
After stationing proper weight limit signs on the Rocky Branch roads leading to the Peabody strip mine operation, residents say state laws limit road hauling tonnage and weight to 10 tons. According to local residents, several Peabody-hired trucks exceed such legal limits. So as Peabody-hired loggers attempted to enter the main site later in the morning, residents peacefully assembled and blockaded the county road leading to the Rocky Branch mine, stretching a yellow crime scene tape across the road, and called on the state police to uphold the laws.
Yep.
Among other things, Jeff Biggers notes, according to several witnesses, 75-year-old Rocky Branch farmer and pastor Alan Porter was threatened.
Yeah. Threatened with what?
Just threatened.
Oh, well. Good for them. That's what it takes, is for people to do these kind of things. And good for them, because they also had the law on their side in that they knew the law, knew what it was, and knew they were right, and they were willing to stand up for that. So, I can't say any more than that. I think that's what it's going to take, is a lot more of that kind of activism. And
that's where the good stuff happens, Kevin. It really is. And again, it's over in HuffPost Green. Just look up Jeff Biggers update: road blockade stops Peabody loggers. It's pretty inspiring, without a doubt. And oddly enough, they didn't send out an email saying, save the gray wolf.
Yeah, last day to save the gray wolf.
Yeah, last day.
Got to add that in.
Although these are the last days for them to save the Shawnee Hills.
Yep.
But they just went about the business of doing it as opposed to waiting for somebody to do it for them. Because until your life, until your community, until your well-being is threatened, it's all ever so esoteric, Kevin. You know what I mean?
And your community probably is being threatened and you don't know about it.
If it is people who are anything but stinking rich, there's probably not a community in these United States that isn't being threatened somehow because money.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Kevin, good talking to you. You have yourself a good evening, and thanks for helping out this evening. It's really much appreciated.
Well, no problem, and hope to be on the Friday on the front porch.
All right, we'll be listening for you. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Lines open, 304-658-3333 on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, that works too. Going back to the Jeff Zuckerberg story, Sandra with a tweet, at Bob Kincaid, said, shouldn't Facebook be complaining to the private concerns that make up 70% of the surveillance state? Oh, wait. Yeah. Because complaining to Barack Obama, complain to the corporate masters of the universe who make all of this stuff happen. And by the way, another little outrage out there. Sandra asking, ain't this some shit? Ban on BP bids for U.S. contracts lifted. Hashtag because money. Oh, I think we have something starting here. Yeah, that's a real story. Environmental regulator ends U.S. contract ban on BP. Now, never mind, the Gulf is still killed. The Gulf is still poisoned. The United States, according to Agence France-Presse, the United States announced Thursday an end to its ban on BP obtaining government contracts following the 2010 Deepwater Horizon disaster, the worst oil spill in U.S. history. The Environmental Protection Agency said in a tweeted statement, no, really, they tweeted this? Well, they could. I guess we're just lucky that they didn't announce it at 4:59 p.m. tomorrow. The EPA says that BP has, and this is a quote, agreed to safety and ethics improvements in exchange for lifting the ban. So now it gets to pursue new oil exploration leases in deepwater tracts in the Gulf of Mexico, and they haven't done a damn thing to make things any better than they were in the first place. No, they've spent most of their energies bitching and complaining about having to pay for all the damage they did in the first place. Today's agreement will allow America's largest energy investor to compete again for federal contracts and leases. Yeah. John Minge, not Mange, Minge, chairman and president of BP America, said, after a lengthy negotiation, BP is pleased to have reached this resolution, which we believe to be fair and reasonable. Oh, my goodness. Oh, absolutely. This is going to be so much better. BP, according to the agreement, will have to add and expand efforts in corporate ethics and compliance. And that'll cost them a couple of boxes of donuts. Enforce a detailed code of conduct. I don't want anybody poisoning the Gulf of Mexico if there's anybody watching. We could? Good. And they'll have to meet EPA audit requirements. Of course, I'm sure the Republicans are working hammer and tongs to make sure that those that whatever audit requirements the EPA might generate will not be allowed to be enforced. And it has to protect, BP has to protect company employees who report violations, and they have to incentivize employees to pursue safety and compliance standards in their compensation agreements. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Anybody buying into this? No, I didn't think so. Me neither. So the countdown to Deepwater Horizon Disaster Part Deux has begun. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You really mean that?
I do, Bill. I do, with all my heart.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Most people say, oh, not him again. Yeah, this plane thing. Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I had forgotten about the, Payne Stewart situation. They can fly on and fly on until they go down.
Yeah, if it's on autopilot.
And you try to figure out where it went down. It's like trying to figure out where you hide my money, you know? Yo, Marzer. God almighty. And anything new on the Ukrainian situation, the things that I have, because I've got to find a news source, and I'll tell you, the internet news sources are, they're so far right. You know, where's the truth, though?
I go to AFP a whole lot, Agence France-Presse, Reuters from time to time, just because I know that in large part I can't trust any U.S. media, because they're just not, I mean...
Well, the fact
they're compromised. The New York Times is good for some stuff.
Yeah.
But, no. I think English language European sources are going to have a little bit more depth because they've got more of an involvement. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's, well, the first casualty of war is what, Bob?
Truth.
Yeah, okay. And what about all that? You begin to wonder about all this other stuff. It's the truth. And what's with the American public that we're going to stick our noses into, this is none of our business.
Well, we're America. Everything is our business. We rule the world.
By the way, Lubbock, Texas. Was Doak Walker from Lubbock, or was it Bobby Lane?
Oh.
And Buddy Holly, where the hell was he from? He was from down there.
He was from Lubbock, wasn't he?
I thought so. I'm glad my memory still works to some degree. I can't remember what I had for lunch, but, this is old age shit. That's what happens, you know. You can't remember anything but stuff that doesn't mean anything anymore. I just found out I went to try to get a book from the library that should
be. Wasn't Doak Walker. He was from Dallas.
Okay. I thought somebody was. I know he was. Where did he play college football? That's the thing. Another thing that throws me a little bit. Because, Bob, those were the glory days for me. When you discover something like pro football when you're 11 years old and you're following the Browns on the radio and they have a tremendous season. And
that, of course, was also the era of pretty above average sports writing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I've never heard it mentioned on these sports talk shows. You think somebody would mention once in a while that one guy got killed playing baseball in the majors, you know. And the problem with the library, I tried to get a copy of a book written by a guy named McKinley Cantor. You ever hear the name?
No.
And he wrote a Civil War book. There was a little series of books for kids called Landmark Books. I remember reading about the thing on the canals. I learned about the Erie and, you know, all the canals in their day, and of course the Panama. Because the Panama, if I'm not mistaken, had a connection with the yellow fever and the cure.
Yeah, more than a passing connection.
Yes. Because people were kicking off from that. And the people who never heard of the Spanish influenza. What do they teach these kids in school today?
I don't remember being taught about it. I just had a personal relationship to it, even though it was 1918.
Yeah. Somebody in the family picked it up, yeah.
No, the woman who would eventually be my grandmother was affianced to, I think, a leg boy. And he died of the Spanish influenza, and as a result, she wound up marrying the Kincaid boy.
Ah. Yeah. This is a family. I don't know how people trace a family history in this country when it only goes back to Ellis Island where some guy hung a name on him.
Yeah, or made up a name, or misspelled a name. Or...
Yeah, and now you're this guy, you know. There was one humor recording company that did a segment on Ellis Island that was hilarious to look at. They hung a name on you.
Well, imagine the disconnection. I mean, the work that Alex Jones did in producing Roots was astonishing because... So many people whose forebears were transported as bought human beings, well, the first thing they did was try to rub out any sense of place, any sense of family, because that was essential to the practice of dehumanization.
There's a very good book on jazz by a guy that was, I think his name was Marshall Stearns. He had a PhD, and he backtracked a lot of the places where certain indigenous peoples from Africa which were sent, like the French Dahomeyan tribe was very big with the French. They settled in Haiti, and they settled in New Orleans, and of course when the Haitian Revolution came out, you know where a lot of those people scattered to the white folk in one hell of a hurry, I might add. New Orleans. And New Orleans, just like Haiti, New Orleans has a long history of voodoo. I know the whole story. Yeah.
arising out of Haiti. And, of course, yeah. You know, Jefferson wound up making the Louisiana Purchase when Napoleon had to sort of beat a hasty retreat from the area because so many, if I recall correctly, so many of his troops had been killed as a result of malaria on Haiti. And, you know, offloading the Louisiana Purchase at 3 cents an acre seemed like a good thing to do.
Well, he needed to, you know, those guys needed to keep money in their pockets for a household I grew up in. There was a lot of dislike of professional military.
Oh, my God, did I say Alex Jones? I meant Alex Haley.
Thank you. I was wondering.
Holy cow. I'm sorry.
I didn't know the guy ever did anything correct in his life. You know?
No, see, you get these things. No, that's two screw-ups in one program. I said Jeff Zuckerberg when I meant Mark Zuckerberg. Thank you, Asa. And then Marty points out, please do not insult the man, Alex Haley, by calling him Alex Jones for obvious reasons.
God.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's what I love about this bunch. I've listened to this show. Is when I've got a question about something, one of them straighten me out.
I mean, we regret the error in a big way.
Well, yeah, that's one of those, you know, one of those, he was caught 50 feet off the base, you know, or whatever, you know. He was leaning the wrong way, yeah. He was halfway down the second when they threw him out, you know. That's the kind of stuff that's embarrassing as hell. That's what I enjoyed about catching.
Yeah, this is looking like curl up in the corner in the fetal position night on the horn after the program's over. Alex Jones, oh, my God.
Well, that's the way things go.
Well, if there's an excuse, you know, we've been talking about him earlier, and I mentioned, you know, he's probably already running the false flag up the pole, you know, with the Malaysians.
Well, I just found some Rose's lime juice, so I have the bottle of gin I have is that...
Gimlets!
Oh, exactly. Time for a gimlet, yeah. But I hadn't heard anything new out of the Ukraine after, you know, they beat the drums wildly.
Well, in my wandering around, I guess diplomatic efforts are continuing. Kerry's talking to Sergei Lavrov, and the Russians are all pissed off because a face-to-face meeting with Putin was turned down, and Putin then threatened to disconnect the phone that's been in the direct line that's been hooked up since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yep. Well, what's the big base down there on the? I think there was the Germans and the Russians fought a huge fight for that one area that's primarily Russian, but Khrushchev handed it to the Ukraine.
Well, you're talking about Crimea?
Yeah.
No, Crimea went to Ukraine out of the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, oh, is that why? Yeah.
Yeah, what, 1994 or so?
Because I'll bet you the Black Sea, most of the Black Sea.
But it was given to Ukraine with caveats of autonomy.
Yeah. Because I believe the Black Sea, a good piece of the Black Sea fleet is based there. I would bet on it.
I'd say you're probably right.
Yeah, that's a big point. What the hell? I think you mentioned why that war was fought. Before our Civil War, you know, where guys like George McClellan went and wrote about it and was a correspondent?
Yeah, it was a religious war.
Oh, okay.
People fighting over invisible friends.
Yeah. Another thing that had jumped out at me, I was reading one of the Spencer books, you know, the guy that was on the television show, and one of the villains was a guy named Joseph Broz, B-R-O-Z. And if I'm not mistaken, those were the first two names of the man who was called Marshal Tito so much.
I believe so, yes.
Pardon?
I do believe so.
Yeah, that's a piece of literary borrowing, isn't it? Take that guy's name.
Yeah, a little bit.
As a gangland villain in Boston, you know. Okay. I guess I don't know everything. I'm trying to find things now. I used to have a bunch of the small tape decks that were real helpful to me, and you can't find them anymore, I don't believe. Although I've seen them, I saw a Sony on, but it's on, I think it's on some eBay site, you know. People, make a buck any way you can. The world's first electronic garage sale. Does that stop?
Yeah, without a doubt.
But I don't know. So there's nothing, no more massive bloodshed. Or, I mean, how those people can run around with Nazi regalia on? The Nazis did not treat the Ukrainians that well, did they?
No, and after I mentioned it a couple of nights ago, our buddy Fruity Wisco over on Twitter pointed out that the Nazis are a small percentage of the of the pro-Ukrainian opposition, and I don't doubt that. But
yeah,
they were in the forefront of the fighting,
mm-hmm.
and they are running around openly wearing Nazi symbology on their clothing. And the problem with fascists is that they don't mind hurting people.
No, that's part of the. Well, you know who accompanied Hitler to the beer hall in Munich? Who was there with him?
Yeah, it was the SA, wasn't it?
Well, and I think Ludendorff was running his mouth a lot. Ludendorff, the guy.
Ernst Röhm was involved with that, wasn't it?
Yeah, Röhm was the SA.
Yeah.
And his end was not too pleasant, was it? He was murdered, I believe, by people that were connected with the Nazi Party. Sometimes you get too good. I'm delighted that I'd forgotten the name of the fellow that had so much to do with trying to keep Germany in one piece during World War II. Because he wrote a book on it. But the problem with the talking books is you try to find stuff, and they convert it into a different machine now. And in fact, I'm waiting for a new one of those, because these are an old four-track cassette tape machine. And that's how they crammed a lot of book stuff onto one tape. And, of course, we know about tape.
Not the best lifespan.
No, my dad would sit taping Timex jazz specials and any kind of jazz he could get off of television. Hell, I had the whole Graham Greene thing, The Third Man, the movie. I had that on tape for you, on reel to reel, because I bought my first reel to reel machine when I was 16, which would have been 1959. Because I was fascinated by that stuff. I should have been a radio man, huh?
I think there's every possibility.
I went as far as fixing radios and televisions, and that's about as far as I went.
Well, that's kind of like my musical history. The only thing I ever learned to play was the radio.
Well, I won't keep you, but I haven't heard much about it. And of course, the plane. When you brought that up, I said, yeah, that's a possibility. Because you never know. Hell, Paul Brown and his wife were flying out of Honolulu, and big section of the plane blew off into the space.
Yep.
And they had to turn it around and get back. So I guess coaching a football game.
Well, you sit there in a passenger aircraft, and they go through, and after you've been through it a couple of times, you tend not to pay attention.
Yep.
Because it's so rote. But they talk about how the little plastic, it looks like a little plastic drink cup, pops down, and just because the bag underneath it doesn't fill up doesn't mean oxygen's not flowing, and make sure you put your mask on first before you help anybody else.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, sudden decompression, you can die real quick, seconds.
What do you get when you come up from the water and you come up too quick?
Oh, the bends?
Bends, yeah. Yeah, well, I've had that happen to the mine, but nothing else, thank you. The only water I like is warm, and it's either, one of my favorite stories is going out, this is after I had a heart attack when I was 51 years old. What do you expect, Was I a hard liver, Bob, or just bad genes and a whole...
Oh, I don't know, that sounds to me like your liver was in pretty good shape.
Yeah, well, liver was good. But anyway, the same year after I had that taken care of, I remember it was cold like it is now, and I went out with a snowblower and did the driveway, and I said, now I'm going to go to the YMCA, and I'm going to sit in that hot tub. I get to the thing, and it's closed. It's like the wire was closed. You talk about utter. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff. Well, I think I mentioned the other classic line was being in the hot tub and wishing there was four women in there with me, and then the women's arthritis class came in and joined me in the hot tub. It's, you know, what else can you do? Stuff happens.
Answered yeah. prayers.
But so at least that situation is slightly under control. But the idea that people wanted to go to war, don't they understand? Weren't they ever taught anything about the number of nuclear-tipped missiles that both of these nations have? And I don't know, what is Russia doing economically, Bob? How do they stand today under this? Because I'm not impressed with this guy. I mean, to me, he's another czar without a crown.
I think that's just the mindset that obtains. We're talking about in many ways a structure that goes back to before the fall of the Byzantine Empire, which considered itself to be Rome. The double eagle of Byzantium, of Constantinople, the double eagle symbol, avatar, was later adopted by the czars.
Yeah, well,
they make an argument that they are the uninterrupted continuation of the Byzantine Empire.
Yep, Constantinople, there was, the Crusades, the Doge of Venice, D-O-G-E, is that how it's better pronounced than dog, I suppose?
Yeah, Doge.
Doge, okay, and he took a crusade that sacked Constantinople.
Yeah, the horses at St. Mark's Cathedral were stolen from Constantinople.
Another act of Christianity, huh?
You betcha.
Yeah, power and money.
There's power in wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb.
Well, exactly. The only power I've ever got was one night I was working on a 25-inch TV console. I used to pull the guts out of them and put them on a bench and connect it to a tube setup, picture tube. And he connected the high voltage line to the tube. Well, I guess I didn't connect it too well because it was a hot night and the damn thing broke loose and that high voltage line came back and whacked me in the chest. But it stings the hell out of you, but it's very low current. That was a change made in television sets in the 40s when the CRTs were running on a high voltage, but a high current. People were getting killed. I mean, you could pump out, I think 28.5 kilovolts was the voltage on some of the modern 25-inch tubes before the changeover, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, this thing swung smooth and hit you in the chest. Man, I didn't look too well doing it, but I was doing a world-class 1940s jitterbug backwards, I'll tell you that. Anyway, I'll let you go, my friend. It's always a pleasure. And I don't know, I sometimes what I enjoy is that if you go through what's happening today, you can always track it back to something that happened not too long ago, and they repeat. The power structure keeps repeating the same. When did you say the coal mine was one that was, how long ago, 1880?
Which one?
Well, the one you were talking about this evening, the situation you were discussing this evening.
Oh, Peabody's, yeah, Peabody, 1895, they sunk their first coal mine in Illinois.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have friends, one friend in particular who signed up for a fracking deal. They paid her half the money, and then they backed off on the other half. Because, of course, once they get the thing in the ground, they can turn it in any direction, and the last I looked, nobody can see it except them. Did you ever have a cardiac where they run the wire through you?
No. I've had what are referred to around here as stretch tests, but
okay,
no.
Yeah, that's the one where they crank you up on the
treadmill.
They turn it up like it's Mount Etna or Alpine, and you're climbing up. I've done that too, yeah. But no, the other one, you lay on the table, they run a wire through you, and you can watch the wire going through your arteries.
Pioneered at Cleveland Clinic, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's where I was, I think. No, I was at Lake Hospital Systems, which between University Hospital and the Cleveland Clinic, they're buying everything in sight. I think they just bought a traveling medicine show last week to make sure they're covering all the bases, you know. With the, well, you know what that stuff was, is those guys hawking through the streets as alleged doctors, and they usually had a, what they tried to tell you was a Native American chief, you know, with their...
Oh, yeah. Doing. Medicine show.
A model of this. Well, you know, what was that southern stuff? Hattacall.
Yeah, Hattacall Hattie.
Yeah, they had, and they were very, you talk about very fair people. They had two guys doing commercials. I think I mentioned that. One was Hank Williams Sr., and the other was B.B. King. So that way, you know, you reach
covering their bases.
Yeah, cover all the markets, make all the money. Anyway, stay out of trouble.
I'll try. Stay out of the Hattacall.
Yeah, I'll try. Take care.
All right. See you, Bill. Bye now. Mr. Stress, Bill, our buddy, calling from Cleveland. We roll onward. And a reminder, we are only $60 away from coming even for fundraising this evening. You know, my Alex Jones, Alex Haley, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Zuckerberg, gaffes notwithstanding. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
It's Nydia. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry I haven't been on the chat room lately, but I've been pretty busy, although I listen to you constantly. Bob, I want to see if there's any way you or the listeners may have some ideas to help me out.
Okay.
I think I mentioned to you through the chat room that, and this is, I realize your audience is national and international. This is the West Virginia thing. But we're having real problems in this state with what's going on with the juvenile detention centers.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that one incident, up near Parkersburg?
Yeah, okay. So what happened is some time ago the state decided to close the Salem Industrial Home for Youth, and I don't dispute that that was appropriate. The facility was substandard. There were a number of incidents that could be certainly documented as abusive, and there was even a death there that was questionable. So the state decided to close it. The problem is they didn't create appropriate placements for those kids, who are the kids who were the most involved. And I had a letter to the editor in the paper the other day, only out of extreme frustration because we can't get any solutions. I mean, nobody is willing to even, or until very recently, admit there's a problem. So what's happened is they've taken the more, frankly, violent kids and mixed them in with kids who are like status offenders, you know, petty crimes, things like that, or just need some diagnostic services. So, you know, do you have to be a genius to figure out if you mix predatory kids in with vulnerable ones? Guess what happens? Right?
Trouble.
Right, trouble. Okay. So, you know, I'm on the board of one of these places, but I'm not the only one by any means speaking out on this. And since the facility I'm on, we've gotten this mixture of kids. We have documented, the facility director has shared with us, that the number of assaults and injuries and altercations has gone up. So we have gone up through the chain of command with the West Virginia Division of Corrections, well, it's juvenile, and then that's within Military Affairs and Public Safety. We had a meeting with Military Affairs and Public Safety in the office of the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court oversees what's called the court monitor. And we got absolutely nowhere.
Nowhere.
It was just absolute denial. There's no problem. We don't need to do anything about it. Even simple things relatively, like let's secure the furniture so it can't be used as missiles and weapons and so forth. No. It just met with absolute obstruction. Well, literally 2 weeks after we met with them, there was what the papers are calling a riot in one of these facilities. And the kids that were involved with this tore the place to bits. Two staff were injured. One was stabbed. One had his ankle broken. The facility I'm on the board of, we had four fights that same, right around that same period of time. And we can't get, the press has, in Parkersburg they covered it, and a little bit in at the Coal Valley News covered a little article on it. But it really needs some major attention. Now, Elaine Harris from Communication Workers was on Hoppy's show. That got a little attention. But what is just, I'm so frustrated, I don't know if you or your listeners have any advice. we have tried to get the Gazette. They ran my letter to the editor, but even though they said, yeah, it's definitely a story and it's ongoing, nothing's happened. Then public radio said they were going to do a story. Nothing's happened.
Have you talked to the State Journal, Nivea?
No. Do you think they'd have any interest? Because we've got to get kick this thing up. Unfortunately, the only way something's going to finally happen is if the public is very aware and it hits the press.
The first thing that has to happen is, unfortunately, because of the world in which we live now, and it's possible, and I'm not diminishing anything you're saying, Nydia,
mm-hmm.
but it's possible that people in other states are hearing this. Somebody in Mississippi could be listening and say, hey, we've got the school-to-prison pipeline here.
Yeah. Oh, that happens, too, although in our state, they are publicly controlled. They're not private.
Right. But what we the first thing that comes to mind is that
mm-hmm.
what you're seeing is juvenile offenders being essentially treated like adult offenders, absent the finding of the courts. And let me see if I can sort of tease this out a little bit.
Okay.
In dealing with adults who have been convicted of crimes, the state is and the courts are under no mandate to do anything except impose the statutorily established sentence unless the judge decides to exercise her discretion and admit probation. There is the only consideration is what is justice in a very broad sort of platonic kind of approach. On the other hand, the juvenile justice system, which as you're kind of noting obliquely, has become rather oxymoronic. There's a stated public policy, legislatively mandated requirement that I'm sure you know far better than I, that a judge's decision in imposing a term of juvenile incarceration must take into account both the best interests of the child as well as the interests of the state, the community, society. And I think in many cases when the decision was made to close the industrial home, which was a hellhole.
Yes, no doubt.
That they made that decision in the best interest of the children, but what they did with them was not done in the best interest of the children. In other words, they dropped the ball on the second consideration.
There you are, and it's kind of like, when they closed a lot of the institutions for people with mental illness.
That's exactly where I was going.
People ended up on the street. They didn't have necessarily the problem.
Huntington State, Spencer State.
Okay, so it's a similar dynamic, but all they've done is push the problem now onto these other facilities that are not staffed, equipped, trained, and have the capacity to deal with these populations. So now we've got, all kinds of things happening all over where vulnerable people are getting hurt. And meanwhile, are you ready for this? One of the facilities, and by the way, the facility I'm on the board of, we've got kids sleeping on the floor. It's so overcrowded. And meanwhile, one of the other state facilities, the Rubenstein Center, has 40 empty beds. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that if they would do some planning and reorganize this, it could be resolved. But instead what we have is people are trying to protect their turf and reputations. And, we don't have a problem, so we're just going to dig our heels in.
Right, so you had that meeting with Homeland Security and Public Safety.
He was there. Joe Thornton was there. Margaret Workman hosted the meeting. Cindy Largent is the court monitor who's in complete denial. And I've been in meetings with
it sounds like really what you got out of that meeting is that you've been forced into a corner. You got to sue.
Well, no, I mean, I don't have the capacity to sue, but I'm going to share with you one other thing that I'm hoping we keep trying to find somebody to cover this. In addition to the so-called riot, there were two sexual incidents among two minors through this whole melee. And when you are dealing with incarcerated youth, even if it's consensual, that is considered rape.
Sure.
Okay, hear me.
Well, it can't be consensual, can it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an... By the way, this is not my job. I work elsewhere in state government. But I'm on the board. I've been on this board for 4 or 5 years as part of something I do on my own time because I have an interest and I care. So I'm not professing to be an expert on juvenile justice. However, what I'm saying is, in this instance, with these incidents with the kids and the sexual contact, you know, I've asked the question, have the families been notified? No. Have they had follow-up medical care?
Not so much.
No.
Well, but see, I mean, and that by itself, and I'm just, I guess I'm kind of winging it here, but the things come into play. For instance, a child incarcerated in the juvenile justice system is deemed to be in the care, custody, and control of the Department of Corrections.
Right.
Well, that means
my understanding is that is considered actually rape. Now, I'm not an expert in this. Somebody else is listening.
Right, but the problem
more about this than can help.
But the problem, Nydia, is that if they're in the care, custody, and control of the Department of Corrections, the Department of Corrections then stands in loco parentis, do they not?
I don't know. I'm not an expert in that area, but I would think you're right.
And if that is the case, and there is sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
Or sexual crime.
Yeah.
Then you would think that the department would be chargeable with at least negligent permitting of sexual abuse, assault, whatever.
Well, yeah,
because there's a statute.
If people don't know about it, you know. And I'm going to share this final thing, and I'll get off the phone, and maybe other people who have some expertise in this area might have some suggestions. But my understanding through sources that are completely credible is that there is tape of these facilities, of course, have cameras. There's tape of everything that went on when the so-called riot occurred, including of these other incidents we're talking about here, and that part of it is now mysteriously missing. So there's a big story here. But oddly enough, even though all the people in the major press in West Virginia go, oh, it's a big story, and they did print my little letter to the editor on, I guess it was Monday, I don't know what day it was, here was Tuesday, then they never follow up, and I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, if I were paranoid, I'd say somebody's putting the kibosh on it. Now, I don't really think that, but maybe the reporters don't want to take the time to do that kind of investigative reporting. I will tell you finally, before I jump off the phone, there are correctional officers who are witnesses to all of this who are willing to speak publicly about it, or at least anonymously. I mean, they're willing to speak to the press. They may not want their names out there. But the union that represents these workers, communication workers, has been filing mass grievances on it. And if nothing else, that's the story. So I'm going to jump off, Bob. Any other thoughts you have, or probably some of your listeners, may even work in this field, they're going to have some suggestions. I readily admit it's not my area. I'm just trying to do something to shine a light on it so we can...
Well, you know, bless your heart for being willing to do it, Nydia, because we've sat... It's folks sitting around waiting for somebody else to take action that makes things like this more likely. So, you know, you're getting it right on the front end. You know, Kevin in Colorado Springs just said, you know, what about some protests at facilities? Maybe you get some of the CWA folks out front, you know, that you know, because then you can send out a press release saying, you know, there's going to be a protest at, and if the press release is written well enough, it's the news story that will just in turn be published.
Well, Elaine Harris is doing everything she can to get a press attention. I told you.
Well, Elaine's good people.
Show, and she's great, and she's been to the legislature. She's been to the governor's office. She's doing everything she can. But, you know, a lot of the employees are scared, and I'm sure.
Well, sure, and
that.
at the risk of coming off as a smart aleck, I'll go ahead and say this.
Yes.
If you could figure out a way to make it about coal,
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the Coons Center's in Boone County. I don't know where the tie-in would be there other than a lot of these families are families of coal miners or people who live in coal-affected communities.
Or the communities that have been that coal has devastated and have subsequently been burned up by meth and oxy this and roxy that.
That's all true. Yeah.
I mean, none of these things ever occur in a vacuum.
No, they don't. It's all tied.
So, well, you know, seeing this as a part of a larger universe of problems, it may be the first step. I mean, I've said before, and maybe it was before you first started tuning in, I've said on a number of occasions that there are places in West Virginia that have more in common with the Gaza Strip than they do with what we call the First World.
That's right. I know that. I travel the state a lot.
Oh, yeah,
I know what you're saying. I'm going to jump off.
All right,
really
thank you, Nitty.
Your input. Thank you.
Don't be a stranger. Jump in anytime.
All right.
Bye now. I should have done a better job making mention of that story, and I'm glad Nitty called in with it. This was going down at the same time as the Freedom Industries water disaster. You know, the MCHM disaster. And I really do think that the starting point is to recognize that it doesn't happen in a vacuum, that many of these kids, God, these kids, please, Bob, you know, you were young once. Many of the young people who find themselves in the juvenile justice system in this state find themselves there because of the absolutely, utterly, undeniably hopeless nature of the cultural collapse in which they live. And you can probably extend that onto into a national metaphor by talking about cultural collapse in various poor communities. Because as I said earlier in the evening, you can probably go to any economically unjust community and find where there is some sort of environmental disaster taking place around them. I remember sitting in a seminar once where the dynamics of a throwaway community were laid out. This was at a meeting down in Mississippi, and they talked about how you can go into any economically underprivileged community, and what you'll find is, you know, 5 payday loan places, maybe a couple of dollar stores, no real national chain grocery stores, liquor stores in abundance, maybe a Rite Aid or a CVS or a Walgreens or something, and that usually there's some sort of four-lane hell that has been driven right smack dab through the middle of the community. These things don't happen by accident, and neither do the crises that attend them. But anybody who wants to chime in on Nitty's queries is welcome to do so, either by phone, 304-658-3333, or by email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And if you've got any long-form ideas, shoot them to me via email, and I'll forward them on to Nitty for her consideration. Unfortunately, these things have to be... understood within the non-privileged context in which they occur. Or so it seems to me. Yeah, Isaac pointing out, and in these same communities, churches on every block. Yeah, without a doubt. So here we are, 25 minutes before the end of tonight's program. Thanks to everybody who stepped up and answered Sparky's pull the pin challenge for March. That has been met. And Boss Man Wayne has reason not to wear his spider-proof gloves when next he goes to the mailbox. Thank you, one and all. We are still looking to raise $60 more to bring us even so that we'll just have the regular fundraising amount for tomorrow's Friday on the front porch. Oh, let's see. Let's close out Thorn in the Side Thursday with a little bit of lunacy, shall we? So this story came in yesterday. And first of all, it concerns a high school social studies teacher. And you know, these sort of personal stories don't, I think it's a little bit difficult to say this is that this has some sort of a national implication. This is a story about one person in one community. But what this person leverages is a national problem. Because you've seen it all over the place. We're talking about a social studies teacher by the name of Randall Scott. He is at R Scott MSGT, at RSCOTTMSGT on the Twitters, if his account is still up. So what happened is that President Obama recently went down to Florida and made an appearance, and Randall Scott, high school social studies teacher at Coral Reef Senior High School, claimed that his First Amendment rights have been trampled upon because he was not allowed to go to the President Obama event. Randall Scott, who is actually allowed to teach impressionable children, had made public pronouncements, among other things, a story in the Miami Herald, said he'd rather dine in hell with Satan than shake President Obama's hand, and describes himself as a virulent anti-communist and hater of Obamanism. Obamanism? Is that anything like Sharia law? Probably. Over on Instagram, via a number of posts, he said, "I'm a conservative Republican who uses social media to express my views. At the last two faculty meetings, our principal had strongly advised us not to post anything. As a citizen of this great country, I chose to ignore her advice," which he spelled A-D-V-I-S-E, "which now in retrospect seems more like a veiled threat. The next day, I'm suddenly excluded from a presidential event." John Schuster is a spokesman for the Miami-Dade County Public School System, and he said, "The size and setup of the event venue did not permit all of the school's staff and students to attend, and local administrators were required to decide who would attend and represent the school." And yes, the Miami New Times did find out that Principal Adrienne Leal did warn faculty not to post anything about President Obama on social media in the days before the event. You know, because the Secret Service, they did it. Well, they have, when you go to Secret Service school, you get your sense of humor surgically extracted for what might be obvious reasons. Well, here's some of the things. Here are some of the things that high school social studies teacher Randall Scott posted. Think about it. Is the pen mightier than the sword, or is Obama just a putz? In my I hate Obama mood. I hate Obama. And posted a photograph that said, think of all the innocent lives we could save by taking pens away from Democrats instead of taking firearms away from law-abiding citizens. Oh, this guy's a real Lulu. And he apparently also hates the First Lady. She had my Pop-Tarts taken out of the vending machine. She is evil, married to a communist. You know, when Pop-Tarts are outlawed, only outlaws will have Pop-Tarts. Well, did I eat the frosted strawberry or did I eat the brown sugar cinnamon? Do you feel lucky? Punk. Yeah, so the Pop-Tarts comment was accompanied by a photograph of Mrs. Obama with a speech balloon saying in all caps, "Eat what I tell you to eat!" And then there's this. A weed-smoking Kenyan is your president, and he is in charge of your health care. Seems normal. And a picture of a young Barack Obama taking a hit off a bong. This is the guy who came up with your health care plan. Remember that as you lay dying. I'm guessing that's been photoshopped. And, you know, when in doubt, just go for the gold. Obama is a pussy. And he posted that 3 times on Instagram. He said, I find it hard to believe the Secret Service could find me a threat. And then asked Marco Rubio's office to look into it and find out why his rights were taken away from him. And WPLG spoke to him and he said, I want whoever's responsible for this to publicly apologize for discriminating against me because of my political views. Gee, I wonder where this defender of freedom was, and he's a real protector wood too, apparently, when people were being herded into free speech zones back during the Law 8 long, tormented, blood-sodden years of the Bush administration. Yeah, probably standing right there in the crowd screaming, 4 more years! 4 more years! USA! USA! Torture? No problem. Illegal wars? Not a problem. Black guy in the White House? America is dying. Lord God. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How are you?
Hey, what's happening, Mark?
I guess he'd be comfortable with the secret interrogation. What do they call those places where they, you know, the...
the black sites?
Yeah, the black sites for the...
he would be taken to a FEMA re-education camp, don't you think, Mark?
Well, of course, he would personally be going to one immediately. I find it interesting. I happened to see that article, wherever it was on Daily Cause or whatever. I said, man, that guy... And actually, I went to... I kind of poked around to see if I could find him. I think I did find him. But in any case... It's kind of, you know, he's, those are threatening comments. When you challenge somebody like this, it's threatening comments. In addition to what you had mentioned earlier in the week where there was a particular website where money's being donated, to possibly bring harm. But, the guy participates in collective bargaining, and he's en route to a pension. So wouldn't that make him more of a communist than us, Bob? I don't know.
Well, by a long shot, yes.
Well, if I'm just saying.
I mean, he needs to haul himself up by his own bootstraps and participate in American individual exceptionalism, doesn't he, Mark?
Well, and I think he's entitled to one last Pop-Tart. I'm just saying.
You mean before we ship him off to the Kenyan Muslim Marxist socialist fascist re-education camp?
Apparently, I don't see where Americans there's a disconnect between reality and perception of reality.
I mean, this is a 40-something guy complaining about Mrs. Obama took away his Pop-Tarts. Okay, he is apparently chronologically 40-something, but he is mentally 2.5?
And a teacher, of course. Now, he's a teacher in Florida, which I don't think their standards are as strict lately. And actually, they're getting weaker. I think, you know, I think if you just say that you want to teach, pretty much we'll give you a shot. I mean, it's...
Yeah, don't say, hey, no, you can't say we'll give you a shot in Florida because it can be very, very dangerous, Mark. Quit that. Retract that right now.
Well, and actually, I think it's possibly more dangerous in Georgia as of today. Did they not approve that law where just arm everybody anywhere?
I do believe... Yeah, was this the take your gun to church bill?
Yeah, I guess. Man.
In the name of Jesus!
Wolverine!
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad somebody's out there working that side of the street with me now.
Well, it's always been there. I don't think you have, the couple of years I've listened to you, I don't really think you've espoused anything that I didn't think or feel. It's very similar to exact same perceptions. I didn't grow up the son of a coal miner, but my grandfather was a coal miner at one time, a union coal miner as well. But I don't understand the... It's just like keep your big government hands off my Medicare.
Yeah, I mean, Marty points out via email, Mark, he says, by the way, don't stores still sell Pop-Tarts? What this pasty-faced doughy dude was upset about was that the Pop-Tarts were apparently no longer in the vending machines there at Coral Reef High School. So that meant that somehow his economic freedom had been limited by forcing him to go down to the Publix and buy them for, you know, a $2 for a box of 10 instead of $1 for a package of 2. I mean, Jesus, right, the stupid with these people, Mark.
I know. It just I think it's a pretty good clue with Michelle's program aimed at the children, which is not done by the hand of Michelle, but done by we have experts with everything that we deal with. And people think that it's the president making decisions about, they make the final decisions on things. Same with Michelle with the health of the children's food, but in public schools. But it's directed by people that have a lot of education and knowledge and history in subjects and that think like we do to give the best recommendation. And the Pop-Tart wasn't there for him. It's there for the children primarily. There's 600 children and only 60 teachers, or whatever the ratio may be.
Do you think we have to rename them Freedom Tarts?
You know, I was working in Virginia when Bush stole the first election, and I would be waiting in line. I was working at the nuclear power plant, Surrey. And I'd be waiting in line with my bottle of French wine and make sure that every time that I'd be at the grocery store saying, I guess this makes me a bad guy. Is this French wine, right?
I remember when they were pouring them in the gutters and stuff, and then I would say, no, mail it to me. I will dispose of it for you.
Exactly. And I've been eating a lot of Freedom Fries and French red wine. That was my protest. And the free speech zones, of course, or wear the wrong T-shirt to a Bush rally. I had a friend of mine when Bush stole the election in 2000. He happened to have been a prisoner of war in the Korean War, and made a career, got back to the States, obviously, like most Americans did, even though some Americans chose to stay in North Korea. But this gentleman made a career out of the Army, and then made a career out of the Union I'm in, and he was a double dipper. And I called him Sergeant Major out of respect to him, because I believe that's the rank he had achieved. He's a southern white male. I don't know exactly what state, but I really respected the man for the way he carried himself amongst us younger workers. And I think I caught a couple projects where Sergeant Major was on the periphery of it. But in any case, he was one of the many, many thousands of Americans, the largest protest in American history when Bush stole the election. And he called my house when he got back, and he said, I thought you had photographs of something. I did, but I couldn't locate what he was asking for. And I said, well, Sergeant Major, I saw your egg. And because... he said, well, you may have seen my egg. He said, Mark, there were so many eggs thrown at the president's car that they could only drive about three blocks, and they literally had to turn and get out of the parade.
And run like hell.
Yeah, they never did show, what's her name, Schwarzenegger's wife, the Kennedy, Maria Shriver. Maria Shriver was in a chair perched high above the crowd, and that camera, I noticed that camera would not dip down to show you. I think there was over 500,000 protesters there for Bush when he stole it. And I don't think they didn't want Americans to see how big that protest was. They never did show you. But any case, there's a little more detail to the story, which I won't share publicly when it comes to issues like that. But any case, when you know you steal the elections, karma. What goes around comes around. I don't know what Americans don't understand, the disconnect. I went.
And the disconnect. But the thing is, Mark, yeah. The disconnect is so damn broad. You could drive. You could sideways a tractor trailer through it.
Definitely.
I mean, it's almost like a disconnect implies that there was once a connect. I don't think we can say that anymore.
It doesn't look that way, uh-uh. It doesn't, I don't ever do that, but
I mean, if you tried to make the connect, the circuit board would probably fry.
It'd blow up worse than your windstorm that passed through there, apparently.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
That's, you know, and of course, that weather pattern, it blasted, you know, has blasted the whole country, matter of
fact. Well, I'm just grateful, Mark, that it wasn't one of them Sharia haboobs.
Texas, right? And there's Mexico, Missouri, and of course, you know, and
Indiana, Pennsylvania.
You get me. And there's Moorhead, North Dakota. More. I think those are the Moors, right? From Northern Africa. You know, where do people think derivative words come from? I mean, you know, it's just so kooky. I don't know. The disconnect, I guess it is. I get a kick out. It's really just an observation of ignorance. And I think if I found myself in that circumstance, I think I'd want to find out a little bit more before I ran off, as they say down south, ran off at the mouth about it. You know, I'm just saying, I don't know.
Yeah, and this is running off at the, my God. On any given night, Mark, there is a parade of right-wing stupid that just marches right through this studio. But the Kenyan Muslim Marxist socialist fascist usurper's wife took away my Pop-Tarts. Jeez. I mean, you've gone pro when you do that. You've just, you know, gone, because, you know, Hunter Thompson said when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro.
That was a cool dude.
But think about, I mean, somewhere today, at Coral Reef High School, this guy was teaching social studies. Can you imagine the libertarian filth he pumps at his students?
It's got to be, I think that would be such a... it'd be really neat to hear some of the things he does share with his students.
I mean, this is on a par with having Ken Ham for your biology teacher.
That's that other dude.
Pat Robertson in physics.
Getting out of the liquor lobby, the liquor cabinet, the liquor storage room on the ship, right?
Right.
And of course, his family was connected to Prescott Bush and Grandfather Bush. I don't ever go to right wing sites, and I actually today was one of the few times out of even messing around with Facebook, I did jump over there, and just for the heck of it, and I kept they had a picture of President Obama sitting next to Putin. It's a photograph, and then you could enter your caption as who was saying what to which, and so I just kept saying I am Putin, I am like Teabagger. Or I am Putin. I kept making fun of Teabaggers on there, and no one would stop. They wouldn't stop. The comments were pouring in there. Were so horrific, Bob. A lot of sexual things. A lot of
information
talk. Really, really rough stuff. And with different ethnicities saying that Americans that you think would be more sympathetic, I think just kind of being like Senator Allen from Virginia with the noose in his office. And little did I know that when he got ran out of office, I didn't realize he was a Jewish American. But I mean, people trying to overcompensate for the redneckery of America and not even being a redneck, it seems to me to be astounding and contagious. And it's pushed by, I see any case without being it's pushed by some of the churches throughout the country, I suppose, these false values that don't seem to really be helping anyone. So anyway, I just wanted to call and point that out about the teacher being a socialist communist with a pension himself. What do they want to turn the country into?
Haiti with cable.
Somalia, no laws, libertarian, ophthalmologist. Anyway, Bob, I'll hang up and listen.
There you go. You've got it, Mark. Later.
Bye now.
Our buddy Mark calling, I suspect, from Florida. Time to get out of here. Thus endeth our Thorn in the Side Thursday. Join us tomorrow night for Friday on the Front Porch. The merry band will hopefully be gathered together on the front porch for some rousing roundtable conversation. Thanks to everybody who kicked in this evening. It was ever so helpful. We pulled up we pulled up only $20 short of meeting the whole fundraising goal. So and that last thanks to our buddy Jug of Punch. Thank you very much, Jug. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is coming up next on The Horn.